Hi, Jason.
Hey, Nicole. How are you?
Good. Welcome back, everybody. if you've forgotten, this is the couple that scares together, and we have been on hiatus intentionally.
We sure have. It's been a while.
Yeah, for a number of reasons, which I think we owe it to everybody to discuss a little bit. One, we are recovering from doggy maternity leave. So I think when we left you all, we'd filled you in that we had lost our dog, and we went searching for the perfect – that's not true. We went searching for any dog that was available, and we ended up getting this sweet little chocolate lab puppy named Charlie, who is hands down the love of my life. So I'm okay with saying that, even with Jason and the four children here. It's Charlie. So – he's remarkable and wonderful. But that was a transition, and, you know, no one was sleeping, and we had to make sure it's like having a baby all over again. And then we made the decision that Charlie needed a friend because he did. And we needed a friend, and if we were going to have two dogs, why not get them now as puppies, and we can have them grow up together and whatever. So we got Moose right after Christmas, and he is a bloodhound, and they are only a few weeks apart, and they're both wonderful and a mess and exhausting. Yes?
Yeah, they're great dogs, man. It's the best.
Well, so Moose is not the best because he is not sleeping through the night yet, and therefore Jason has decided that the best idea would be to sleep on the floor with a dog and just to get him through.
First of all, right now as we speak, if I might just jump in here, mm-hmm. Your dog, which is so wonderful, is now chewing on my pull-up bar.
Pick it up.
He's chewing on my pull-up bar as we speak, mm-hmm. which is not good.
Mm-hmm. I pick him up. He's fine. There's nothing wrong with Charlie. He's a perfect angel. So we've like entered into this new phase where it's exciting, and but they're puppies and we love them and they're a handful, but we're putting in the work now. And we're happy to do so because we want them to be amazing dogs. And on top of that, we are joined our local search and rescue team because we want to see if we can take them and have them do search and rescue. We know we are undertaking a colossal amount of training, and but we feel like we can do it, and we really is something we've talked about for a long time, and we're going to do it with these dogs.
What's the word that you used to describe? No. Not the training. The fact that they're kind of a pain in the butt. What did you describe that as?
I don't know.
What word did you use? Let me make this clear.
They're squirrely.
So, I mean, since we got the bloodhound about 2.5 weeks ago, I mean, I've been sleeping on the floor of our bathroom and bedroom mm-hmm. in a sleeping bag uh-huh. because the bloodhound hates being kenneled at night. And when he goes in the kennel, he screams as if he's being killed. And he doesn't scream, he howls,
yes.
But, you know, because he's a hound. And so he doesn't really bark, he howls.
Correct.
And he howls for, like, an extended period of time.
He will not cry himself to sleep. He won't do it.
No. And, it becomes so loud that you're afraid that, like, neighbors are going to wake up, or our kids, which would be even worse.
Right, correct.
So there's that. So, you know, and then the problem is compounded by the fact that his bladder is not yet fully developed to the point where he can hold it through the night. And so I'm getting up about every 2 to 3 hours to take him out to the bathroom for about 2.5 weeks straight. So it's not – he's a great dog. And all that, but, you know, I'm a little tired.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas my wife now has taken to, like, laying in the bed fully.
I'm okay.
By herself, yes. With Charlie, as I am in a sleeping bag on the floor. At one point, I was in the bathroom because he was peeing so often. It was, like, every hour to hour and a half that I would fall asleep because I was so tired. And then he would just pee on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
fortunately, he's now, what, like 12 weeks old or so?
Yeah.
And he's beyond that point, but I'm still getting up like every 3 hours. It is like having a baby.
Yeah, and we know that. We feel like it was to be expected. So we were prepared for it to a certain degree.
I wasn't prepared to sleep on the floor.
Listen, I know that Jason doesn't understand this, but the irony is not lost on me. We have four children, okay? And I nursed and got up with every child, and he got up with none.
Occasionally, I would get up.
No. If it were, it was out of, like, distress or because I was having a breakdown. But four children I weaned for months.
I drove for to Burger months. King. Whoa. In my defense, yeah. I drove to, like, Burger King and McDonald's and places like that. No, I'm sorry. It wasn't even that. It was Wendy's.
When I was pregnant, you mean?
A proper shout out to my man Dave Thomas
and
then at Wendy's.
I got so sick.
Yeah, no. I did my part. I drove to Wendy's on numerous occasions to get you a Whopper when you needed
it.
Double cheeseburger or whatever. French fries.
All right. So the moral of the story is I feel like I've done my time when it comes to getting up with kids and whatever. I got up with Charlie, and he just didn't need the same sort of level of support. And now we're sleeping comfortably.
It's not even close to level of support.
Charlie sleeps through the night like an angel pants. Sometimes he would, like, whine when he needs to go to the bathroom.
By the way,
And I'm like, oh, do you need to go to the bathroom? Okay, let's go. No accent. Here we go. And he's amazing.
I also take him out on occasion, too. Which
I appreciate that. I take your dog out all the time for walks and stuff. I'm a good dog.
Not at nighttime?
No. Probably not.
By the way, so this other idea that she had just recently was to, hey, why don't you try putting a diaper on him at night times in case he pees? Because there have been times.
No. That's not what I said. I said keep one next to you. And because Jason has many times tried to get him up and take him outside really quickly and covered up his weenie, and he has still peed all over him.
With my hand,
cover it with a diaper because it would be more absorbent.
With my hand or a towel, and he would just let go because he can't even control himself. And there'd be like a spray of piss.
Yes.
Like, that would go all over him and me and the floor.
It's been amazing.
And then I have to like clean it up at like 2 o'clock in the morning when
the irony of everything I did for those children. And how he never got up in the middle of the night. And now he's been doing it for 2 weeks.
First of all, I couldn't nurse the children.
2 weeks.
I couldn't nurse. I didn't have teats to nurse them. So how would I even do it?
Sir, if you had teats, you wouldn't have done it. And if I had said, okay, well, I'm going to fix bottles in the night so you can do it, you would have been like, I'm going to work.
These children need, like, real teats. They don't need bottles. I mean, our kids were, like, you know, all about the real teat. As he should have been.
Oh, so bad. I'm like, get up with your dog. It's time to nurse.
So, I mean, listen, there's been a lot of stuff that's transpired since, like, Thanksgiving, I guess, was around that point.
Yeah.
And it was everything. It's a lot. It's quarantine.
It's the world's on fire.
Family stuff. Like, it's just a lot.
The world's on fire.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think we kind of lost.
It was the White House that did it to me. All the stress and strain for watching.
Oh my God.
The White House.
It wasn't even that. It was just not even being able to be on Facebook.
Being bombarded.
Yes, because it was just too much to bear.
Right. But it's too much pressure.
Jeez. So let's just tell you, we're turning over a new leaf starting tonight. And we're back into it because this is good for us. We hope it's good for us.
It's
Who knows?
Therapy, because Lord knows during quarantine and like all this, you know, just work pressure, family pressure, just like everyday life when you don't really leave your house all that much. I mean, I know that it's not just, you know, like the two of us that are, you know,
that have had it.
Yeah, it's everybody across the country, probably across the world, frankly.
Well, you know, they said that shelters were out of dogs.
Right.
Because everyone was like, I need a dog.
Yeah, I need
a comfort animal.
Exactly. Yeah.
And we did not do it half-heartedly. It just kind of was happenstance for us. But, and I think we talked about this when we were talking about Charlie, we wanted a rescue dog. And we wanted a mutt. We've always had mutts. And no rescue organization would give us a dog because we have young children. And also because I don't think there's a lot of rescue dogs available.
No.
Fosters are taking over.
They're all sold out.
Yeah, everybody's fostering an animal. And those fosters are like, well, we'll see.
So,
which is great for dogs, but bad for dog owners who want dogs.
Yeah, so now we have two large breed sporting dogs.
Yes.
Chocolate Labrador.
Listen, Charlie's an angel, so if you know any, you don't have to tell me anything about Labradors. They're the most perfect creatures on the planet. However, if you know anything about bloodhounds, we read a lot, and we were part of lots of groups, and we're committed, and we love him. So please don't get confused. And we know what we're in for. We got a naughty dog. But if you know anything about bloodhounds, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach out and email us or tell us about what we need to know about bloodhounds. If you have any tips on how to acclimate them to a kennel, which is not throw treats in there, use positive praise, and feed them their meals in there.
We've tried all that.
We have laid next to the kennel with a hand inside the kennel. We have tried to
put the kennel
desensitize the kennel. We've found sound machines. We've tried
playing the radio, right? I've laid in bed with the kennel next to me, next to my head,
yes,
in hopes that he would fall asleep. He slept
the longest he slept was like 2 hours.
Yeah, 2 hours, and then he wakes up.
And then I think he actually was confused because he was like, "Oh my god, how did this happen?" It was one of those I just fell asleep accidentally because he was so pissed off he wouldn't go back in. And he might not be a dog that we can ever kennel quite like that. We might have to just not kennel him at night.
What's Charlie eat? Charlie's eating
nothing.
Something.
He's fine.
No, he's not eating something.
He's not.
He just ate part of the chair.
Oh, okay. That's part of my desk.
He just ate part of Nicole's
that's
desk.
That's an extra
right in front
part
of us,
that I don't need.
Right
and
in
he
front
knew
of us as we're podcasting. He just took a chunk
it
of the desk.
It must be you.
And he's now he's biting something else.
If that's a stuffed animal.
That's just, never mind. That's
it must be you because when I teach, and I teach from my desk, he lays down right underneath it, and he is perfect. So, all right, well,
so
that's good.
That he destroys stuff in our house.
I know, he's a mess. We know he's
listen,
a mess.
He's just a puppy. That's what he does. But my wife's like, oh, no, he's wonderful, perfect.
I don't think so.
Angel.
He is an angel. All right, so tonight, because I put this together a long time ago, but because we have been spending an awful lot of times in the woods, right, taking dogs for hikes.
Yes, absolutely.
We've been hiking, and we've been practicing
search and rescue stuff, and
scent trails and all kinds of stuff. We've been spending an awful lot of time in the woods, right? It's our favorite place, probably.
Yeah.
Being
outside, for sure.
Being near trees and nature is really good for us. And so I thought we'd talk a little bit about, this is a good old fashioned, what's happening in the woods.
Woods is scary, man.
The woods are scary. And I know I'm circling the drain when it comes to the missing 411. We're not doing that show tonight. However, we're going to talk about everything but when it comes to it. So I don't know about you, but have you ever had an experience in the woods in which you were? I told you about the one in Gettysburg. That was in the woods mm-hmm. for me. Have you ever had an experience in the woods?
No. What? I have. What is he doing now?
Nothing. He's getting comfortable.
You mean like a ghost like a, experience?
Like no, or just like no. Just bad. Just
deer hunting and stuff. Yeah.
But like a scary experience.
Oh no.
Not really.
Oh well, yes. Actually, I have had a scary experience.
Okay.
Years ago, I was hunting with my dad.
Okay.
I was probably about 12 or 13 years old.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we're out in the woods. It's early in the morning. And my dad had to use the bathroom. You know, we're in the tree stand.
Sure.
Okay? So, you know, there's no bathrooms around. Like, the only bathroom is we leave the hunting spot and go back to my grandmother's house, which is nearby.
Right, okay.
But, you know, you can't do that because you're going to, you know,
no.
Deer would get spooked.
Yeah.
And you're, you know, that's it for the day, right?
Yes.
So my dad, he, he's going to love this story.
He won't
climbs down. He climbs down from the tree stand.
Okay.
And he takes a shit.
Yeah.
You know, near the tree stand, covers it with leaves.
Perfect.
Well, like an hour later
perfect.
Or so.
Awful, thank you.
Just a short while later, the neighbor's dog.
Stop.
The neighbor's dog. Speaking of dogs, the neighbor's dog comes out to the woods and sniffs it out and eats it.
Oh, my God. That's so gross.
So, yeah, like, that's a
well,
pretty
that's terrifying.
Scary, that's a pretty scary, terrifying experience that I had in the woods years ago. With my dad, probably, Jesus, it's like 30 years ago now.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's pretty scary.
Well, I've had one kind of not so friendly experience in the woods. And I'm kind of nervous to share this because it's very cliche. And I don't want people to think that.
Did you hear what I just talked about? I'm
getting, yeah, I know.
What are you nervous about?
Well, okay. So, when I was in college, my friends and I and my boyfriend at the time, we did a lot of camping. Like, that was, they like to do that. So we did a lot of camping. We did a lot of camping near the stuff, places that we camp now. The cabin that we go to.
Yep.
Okay.
West Virginia.
Yep. So I don't think we weren't there. And now for the life of me, I don't even remember where we were, to be honest. So whatever. But we went away for camping and we went with his sister and her boyfriend. And she was terrified of bears.
Yeah.
And which is strange because she grew up in that environment. You think she'd be cool about it.
They're scary.
They are scary. And maybe I was just like ignorant about it that I didn't, you know, I didn't know enough to be scared, but probably should have been. And we were at one of those campsites where you hike in everything you need, and then you camp in tents, and that was it. So we did that, and I think we were there like, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 nights. It was in the summer. It was really hot, really nice. It was the kind where you could, like, we were by the water, so you could take a bath in the water. I mean, it was rough. You know what I mean?
Fun. Bath in the stream?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Oh,
that's
hardcore. I am
hardcore.
I am. Anyway, we had a great time. But every night, she would go, she was terrified of bears. And every night, she would, like, fuss and be like, oh, my gosh, the bears. Like, I heard something or whatever else. We had 2 different tents.
Well,
and
so, oh, you're actually, you're
tent.
Tenting.
Tent.
Not even a cabin.
Tent.
That's legit, yeah.
And she would say, like, I heard her, like, in the middle of the night, wake up her boyfriend, who is now her husband, and say,
You
have to walk me. I need to go to the bathroom. You have to walk me because I'm terrified of bears. Like, whatever. So one night, the second night, I think, that we were there, she, I don't know if she went by herself or not, but I heard all this fussing, and she comes back, and she's like, there is a bear out there.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, we didn't really believe her, right? So we packing up all of our stuff, going home. We have to walk back out, right? We walk back out to where we parked our vehicles, and there is a truck full of guys there. Like, it's so cliche. And we're just getting our stuff in and everything else. And I think, like, my boyfriend and her boyfriend were making kind of camp conversation.
Sure.
Whatever else. I'm not very comfortable around, like, that is sort of a trigger for me. It's just, like, groups of men like that.
Tell them why.
No, because I don't want putting it out in the universe. Like,
Use your imagination.
Yeah, I'm a woman, so I kind of feel vulnerable in situations
that.
I take a lot of precautions when I go hiking. Like, I carry a weapon and stuff because I'm very nervous about, you know, just I want to be safe. Anyway,
sure.
I am not somebody also who makes idle conversation. And at the time, my boyfriend was. So he's chatting, whatever. We are all packed up to go. And one of those men said, hey, write to my boyfriend's sister. Hey, I hope you get over your fear of bears. Like, something to that effect. I hope you're not frightened of bears or anything else. And we all got in, drove down the road, said nothing for a good few minutes. And then Leslie says, so we didn't mention bears. And she goes, I swear to you, they were at our campsite here in every conversation.
Yeah.
So that's creepy. It was, we didn't know at the time, but afterwards, it certainly was like, oh.
No, that's weird.
It's weird.
Like,
creeping around, eavesdropping, whatever, being weird. Well, she, at the time, kept telling us she felt like she was being watched.
She was.
She thought it was a bear.
As a person.
Right. So there is an effect, there's a phenomenon where you feel like, where humans can detect being scared, I mean being stared at by extrasensory means.
He's got your slipper.
Oh my gosh.
He does. He's got, we should get a picture of this because he
thrashes it.
He got your, a shark and a seal. Just like that.
So there's a phenomenon, a psychic staring effect it's called, and it's called scopacithia. It's highlighted here.
It's scopus, scope, Scopus thetia.
So, okay. And that is the term for when humans can detect being stared at without actually seeing anything, using their extrasensory perceptions.
So it's called scopus thetia, mm-hmm. which is really hard mm-hmm. to say, but right. that's what it's called. Scopus thetia.
And a lot of people report this when they're in the woods, that they feel like they're being watched.
Thetia is like fear of.
Right, right, right. So... Well, that would be phobia, isn't it?
Well, it's similar to, if I'm correct.
Okay.
Which I think I am, but perhaps not.
Okay, we'll have to look it up. But anyway, so people report that when they're in the woods, that mm-hmm. they feel like people are watching them, all right? So much so, we're going to talk about some stories of people being watched tonight. Oh, and we're God. Also going to talk about something called the Watchers.
See, this is a problem because we
now go... Now we're going into the woods.
We go... camping all the time, and right. we go into the woods like every weekend.
Sure.
And
I was just talking about like, telling me all spending the stories about how that, like yeah. going camping by myself in the woods. Yeah. Like that was what I wanted to do. So this is great. I'll probably scare myself, but whatever. All right. So have you ever heard of The Watchers?
I saw the movie.
That's not the same. But let's talk about what The Watchers are. And people report this phenomenon in the woods, some of them. But we're going to talk about what they are. The Watchers are, if you believe any of this, fallen angels. So the Watchers in the Bible, and I'm not biblical in any sort of reference, so I'm not going to reference this, but in Genesis 6, 1 through 4, they're mentioned briefly, and the Watchers apparently cohabitated, you know, with women and fell from God's grace, and the Watchers are referred to as the sons of God. Their offspring, right, are called the Nephilim. Have you heard of the Nephilim?
Yes.
Okay. And that is the corruption of the Watchers. So they helped to create Earth. And then God was unhappy with what happened and whatever. And he sent the Great Flood to destroy it. Okay. So, and there are veil, they're just little bits about it, and not as much as you would expect in the Bible. But sometimes they're referred to as the children of heaven, and they could not resist themselves for taking human wives. And there's all of these names that are given to them. And the reason we're going to talk about that today, and there's this theory that the Nephilim, and that they were giants.
Oh, you know what? I remember this. Okay, well, not this per se, but I remember that term being kind of passed around.
Right.
It was another podcast that was talking about the large
okay.
giants that killed some people.
Okay. So the story goes that they took women as wives, right? Committed adultery against the new wives. Their offspring, the giant Nephilim, turns against the people and cannibalize them.
Kind of like Jack and the Beanstalk with kinda. The giant.
And lots of things come from that. And drank their blood. The Watchers taught people secret arts like magical medicine, incantations, knowledge of plants and herbs. They get very specific about what Watcher taught, the art of making weapons, war, jewelry, cosmetics, dyeing, like hair dyeing, yeah, alchemy, plant lore, how to perform magic, astrology, teaches the zodiac. Teaching about the stars, about the moon. And in the Book of Enoch, they mention this too. And there are 21 chiefs of the fallen, and some are maimed more than twice. And the reason why we're mentioning it here tonight is there are some theories, right, that they this offspring still exists and that maybe that's what we're confusing Bigfoot as or anything like that.
It's like a, I don't know. It's a possibly, I guess. I mean,
who knows? Really, but it's just a theory, right? But I thought it was sure. important to mention because I think that we are absolutely going to circle back to stories that are biblical and demonic in nature because it gets really scary. Like it gets very, very scarily that who are you calling out for? And that I don't know about you growing up, but angels were a big part of my upbringing because I was raised Catholic. Yep. And when you're a raised Catholic, you know, you're told to pray mm-hmm. to the Archangel yes. Michael when you're scared. And you pray to St. Anthony when you lose something. St. Anthony, I've lost something that can't be found. Right?
Both of us are Catholic, so...
Yeah, but I was raised that way. So with mine's like ingrained. Like I had an angel in every bedroom I've ever been in. I had my mom put...
They're in our bedrooms now.
I know. My mom put miraculous medals underneath my pillow and mattress. Right? Like the things I grew up in...
Teddy and Belle have this right now.
Right. And but sometimes when you read about other depictions, angels are ferocious. Like they're not what we maybe thought they were. And it gets you into this topic of realms for me. And maybe we just don't have a full understanding of everything. I mean, I know we don't have a full understanding of everything that's going on.
Certainly not. I would agree with that.
Yeah. And that we are misclassifying. I'm not really sure. So we're definitely going to circle back to that. Tonight, we're going to talk about some scary stuff that happens in the woods, some of which involve watching.
Let's do it.
Okay. All right. So away we go.
We're a little rusty. It's been a while. On the first segment there, came and went. We didn't do it. We forgot. I forgot for sure.
Oh, my gosh. Please. No one noticed. Just keep going.
Anyway. All right.
So the first story is called The Torture Chamber in the Rocky Mountains.
All right.
Here we go.
And away we go.
My boyfriend at the time and I were hiking up in the Rockies. We came across what looked like a small silo. The door on it had a padlock, but it was unlocked, like it had been busted off. We were curious what it was inside of it because it was weird when we came upon that we came upon anything at all. We weren't on a trail and we were way up there. My boyfriend at the time opened it up and inside was what looked like a torture chamber, like a full-on chair with restraints and chains coming from the ceiling. There was a trap door on the floor and no way we were opening it. We hiked right back to our car and left. I still feel creepy about it to this day. Okay, that's terrifying. Right? There is so much in the woods that is crazy that these stories, I think, can be the most frightening for me.
Well, I mean, like, think about it. Yeah. I mean, it's in the woods. It's dark. It's, you know, it can be creepy. There's wild animals.
Right.
Like, there's no real civilization.
We're
vulnerable. Like, I mean, that really can be traced back to, you know, just... thousands or whatever, you know, millions, of whatever, whatever length of time it is you're talking, but, you know, when you're looking like early man or what have you and how vulnerable those people must have been and must have felt.
Sure.
I mean, there's part of us, like, I mean, that's still there.
Well, and I also think we are so disconnected from nature these
absolutely.
Days that it has to be so sanitized and when anything goes a bit awry, we are not emotionally prepared for it. We're not.
No, absolutely not. Like, oh my God, where's my cell phone? Like, you know.
Okay, ready for another one?
Sure.
Okay. When the forest goes silent, pack up and move along. That's what it's called.
Oh,
I worked for a few months as a park ranger with the Florida Forest Service at my local state forest. The creepiest thing I saw was a poor young man who hung himself on my second week on the job. The unexplainable, though, are obviously not as cut and dry. We'd have children's clothes neatly folded and left on trails and pairs of shoes in the middle of our dense burn blocks and just a general sense of eeriness. My first few weeks on the job, I was easily spooked, but after I got into my groove of spending hours alone in the woods, it took a lot to shake me. When the forest goes silent, though, pack up and move along.
Yeah, because it... Like usually means predators in the area, something. That kind of thing.
And when people have terrifying experiences in the woods, and even some of those missing 411 episodes, they always, a lot of times people will mention, or people that think they've had near close calls with things will say the forest went quiet.
I'm telling you that you watch those, and I know that you're fascinated by those cases.
Fascinated.
But, part of me, like, I feel conflicted because I like watching those programs. I mean, they are very interesting. They're captivating.
Yeah.
But they are so depressing, man.
Right.
When you're talking about, like, kids and young people that are lost or, like, older, you know, people that maybe, you know, they're losing their mental faculties or whatever. And get lost in the woods. It's just, it's so, so sad. And I watch those and I feel really horrible.
Right.
As I'm watching it, like, especially when Dave talks about children.
I know.
Who, hey, I know. We found a shoe, we found a pair of shorts.
I know.
We found the shirt, the kid was, like, didn't have any clothes on. I mean, God damn, it's enough.
Well, a couple things. I feel like I am bearing witness to a part of their story, and that is a decent thing to do. Part of it is I'm fascinated by it. But part of it, reason why I want to do search and rescue is because I want to help.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of doing the combination of all of it.
No, I get that. I get that.
And part. I feel like it's a puzzle that I want to, figure out.
Yeah, as far as...
Yeah.
Like,
right. That's why I listen to it. All right, here we go. This one is called, All I Could See Were Two Eyes About 3.4 to 4 Feet in the Air. Ugh. I was the lone recreation ranger in a small district in southern Idaho. Nearest town from the guard station was about 1.5 miles away by car. After moving into the guard station, solar power was not working, and I hadn't slept for about a month due to various factors. Bat in the cabin, something walking on the deck at night. Oh my gosh. The woods there were always had an eerie feeling to them, unlike the southwest ponderosa forest that I was used to. About 2 months into the seasonal job, I started to hear something walking and scratching on the deck at night, perhaps even on the door. Now, this district was known for badgers and beavers, so I didn't think much of it.
Yeah, I was going to say, it doesn't wildlife. Have to be something
that's horrible. Sure, wildlife is terrifying.
Well, I mean, it could be like a raccoon.
Right.
Commonly.
Sure.
You know, that could be a thing.
When leaving the cabin one night, I always had an eerie feeling like I was being watched. One night, I was returning from my grocery run, always one on Tuesday nights, and I had a bad feeling. At the time, I did not have my shotgun in the vehicle. After stepping out of the vehicle, I looked to the right of the cabin, and about 50 feet from my front door, all I could see were two eyes about 4 feet in the air. To say I freaked out was an understatement. I started yelling, "Get the fuck out of here!" But the eyes only crouched down and inched closer.
Well, I mean...
At this point, I could tell it was a large animal of some kind, but definitely not a coyote.
Could be a bear.
Could be.
I mean, it's Idaho.
Right. I tossed a piece of firework in the general area of the creature, and the creature leapt back a bit, but did not make a sound. Tossed 4 or 5 more pieces, and the creature still inched forward. At this point, I fumbled with my keys, and of course, the fucking solar power was out again. I managed to get inside and grab my shotgun. Technically, you're not supposed to have guns in government housing, but who the fuck lives in the woods, in the hills, have eyes, backcountry, and does not carry?
Right.
Went outside, and the creature was a bit closer. Still could not get a look with my shitty headlamp. Loaded shotgun and continued to throw pieces of wood with one hand. Finally, the creature walked back into the brush. That night, I drank 4 IPAs and slept with my shotgun. In the morning, the trail crew came up and we found mountain lion tracks all over the porch, rocking bench, and the compound leading back to the creek. After that event, I always heard the rocking chair move and someone or something was walking on the porch, but never found any tracks after that point. Considering that it was always muddy up there, it was weird to not find any tracks. I'd been stalked by mountain lions before and had never had that eerie feeling like I did in the woods that day.
Yeah, so it was out there.
Oh.
Stalking him, man.
Well, he said that he had been stalked by mountain lions before and this didn't feel the same. Well, maybe, but you know, like, animals are very strange. It could have been a strange, like, the behavior, like, he wasn't having the typical mountain lion behavior.
Right, it could have been starving. It could have been sick. Like a young juvenile that was hungry, could have been injured.
Who knows?
Could have been sick, like you said. I mean, it could be just in a desperate situation to where it's, you know, it's going to act out of character and be more aggressive, hyper-aggressive.
Sure, could be. All right, this one was called... They heard at least 20 people scream, "Get out." My dad said once he was out in the forest with another ranger, they had to keep... once he was out in the forest and he was with one other ranger. So he must have been a ranger. All right. They had to camp halfway or they had to camp overnight halfway to their destination. Well, that night they heard footsteps and a lot of noise outside their tent. Don't read. I'm reading. Then they heard at least 20 people scream, "Get out." Needless to say, they got the fuck out and radioed it in. The next morning, the cops went out and searched and found 4 skinned animals pinned to the to the trees around the campsite. Ugh. The crazy people in the woods.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah. All right. Have you? And so we talked about being watched on the trail.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So then, as I was kind of researching terrifying, scary things in the woods and just the general uneasiness of that, I came across this study from 2013 that I wanted to share and kind of talk about, because I think that, I don't know, I think it's really relevant. You know, part of what I do at school is that I work with kids with disabilities. And one example of that is I work with visually impaired, and I work with deaf-blind kids. That's what I'd like to do. And ultimately, I'd like to do that probably exclusively. So I'm fascinated by sensory differences and sensory abilities, right? So I wanted to talk about that phenomenon, okay? Because they say that your sense of sight, that you are only registering a portion of that data. So your eyes are picking up way more and relaying that to your brain than you can even process, right? You aren't conscious that you're interpreting that kind of information. And so they demonstrated this with a 2013 study, and they had a male patient who was cortically blind. Okay, so that basically means his visual cortex had sustained damage, preventing him from seeing by definition, but it still allowed him to transfer input from his eyes to his brain. Okay, so that's different than if somebody is born blind and they've never had that experience where they've transferred
the data.
You know what I mean? It's a different sort of damage. Yeah. Okay, in the study, he was shown a series of faces, some looking toward him and others looking away. When he was shown image of those looking at him, activity in his amygdala spiked. And that's the part of the brain that responds to threats and arousal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The scientific interpretation of this result is that people can interpret happenings outside of their direct field of vision. And another theory suggests that people are capable of feeling of being watched even when there is a certainty that the one's there due to this misperception, okay? And the theory poses that the body can experience a brief lapse in the ability to differentiate between the self and the other. In other words, because you're watching something, it may cause you to feel as if you're also being watched. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Possibly, I don't know. I never heard that before.
Well, okay. So there are a lot of ideas, you know, regarding why humans find the idea of being watched so disturbing. Like, why is it disturbing?
Vulnerability,
us?
I guess, is number one.
Most of them stem from some sort of a biological reaction to a gaze. Most species use a gaze to indicate either dominance or a threat, which will explain why an unsettled reaction to the feeling of being watched by maybe a natural response. Other theories suggest that humans are trained to be extremely responsive to eye contact, given that this is the first stage of engaging in interaction with one another.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, but it got me thinking about all this psychic sort of stuff that we talk about, and that maybe we are seeing things, but we can't process the data because we don't have the brain power or the language or there's something wrong with our brains are not developed enough.
So is your theory that those individuals are able to just process more information?
Yes, they're a little more.
That leads to these abilities, which we then perceive as them being psychic, but in reality, it's kind of like a superpower. I don't know.
Correct. You
know,
it's like they have a muscle that's more developed.
Yeah. Just.
Yes.
Greater ability.
Yes. And I think maybe when we are feeling watched, or when we feel that like prickling on the back of our neck, or we're feeling watched, or we feel eyes on us or something like that, I think our eyes are actually seeing something and our brain cannot reconcile the information.
So think about this. Like, have you ever heard of people that have like a photographic memory or those abilities?
Yes.
So my question, and what I mean, because I met some people that, you know, that that are photographic, and they're, I mean, it's incredible, like the amount that they can process and remember,
right?
And to just the recall, and I mean, to have that kind of skill, that ability, would be tremendous, you know, while in school as a child.
Sure.
Later in life as an adult, you know, within your own career. I mean, just the, and I guess my thing is this, I've always been fascinated, you know, by that ability, in that how can those individuals do that? Because they can't explain, you know,
yeah,
how or why they, it's just there.
It is just the power they have.
Yep.
I also want to know what's, and I'm sure there's people have done research on this. I'm sure there have. I'm not the one to think of this, but I want to know what's the correlation of people like that and that also have report psychic abilities. Or maybe they don't even know they have it, but do they report that they, you know, funny things happen to them, or they can whatever, or they can, I don't know. Is there some sort of correlation, because that's maybe a similar muscle that's developed?
Possibly. I mean, maybe. I have no idea, but just think about like college board exams and things like that.
Well, you're
and
thinking
like
of
homework,
it. Like
and
I want
study. And just, no, but like that kind of thing, and like a career, like how
okay,
much.
Okay, so if you had a choice
to your benefit,
that you could have that ability, but you also saw through the veil into stuff that wasn't in our general realm or general environment, would you take
like
both?
Angels and demons and things like that?
Maybe not even so dramatic as that. Maybe people that have passed on to another dimension.
Would I want that ability?
Yeah, you got to take both. Because I'm like,
I don't know. Like,
neither.
I have to speak to people that actually have the ability on both ends. Mm-hmm. To get their opinion, you know, I mean, is that a help? Is that a hindrance
right.
to you within your, I mean, that would be incredibly difficult. I would say, if you're growing up and you have that ability, then, I mean, that's a lot to handle. It's a lot of responsibility. As a kid, people just aren't going to believe you.
Sure.
And I mean, even
well,
later in life, people.
Think of- That might be a frightening experience.
Yeah, well, think about the Warrens, for example.
Yes.
Like, all the trauma that they went through.
Yeah. So. Well, and I have a friend, and I'm not gonna say who it is, and I'm not gonna say what her, I'm not gonna give details about that because she has not given me permission to, but she has had some really strange things happen to her growing up, some traumatic and some things that were trauma based, in which she felt like an over a really nefarious presence, and I think she probably has some abilities that she's pushed down. She wants zero part of it. It was terrifying growing up. She wants to live in the light. She wants no part of this. If she could have this, she doesn't even want to open a door to see out what it is, and for her it is shut. And so
each person has to make their
right.
decision.
Right. So I'm just asking, if you had to choose, you get all these gifts, right?
I think it's pretty interesting, honestly.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a hard, yeah, I'd want to do it. I mean, I would want to use those abilities to help people if I could, yes.
Right. Okay. Yeah, to help people.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, that's something to think about. So I think maybe some of that is what's happening when people feel watched. I think maybe. So the next time you feel watched, just think, well, maybe I'm actually seeing stuff and my brain cannot register it.
Yeah, it's possible.
That's very scary.
Well, I mean, that isn't that scary. That's just like that's just biological.
Right.
I mean, I don't think that in itself is scary. It's just,
what
we
if
just
you're
don't
seeing
understand
stuff that's,
it.
That's there, but we just go through life and don't notice?
Well, I mean, it's possible that happens all the time.
Whoa.
Because people talk about seeing,
I know,
ghosts, like,
how do they deal
members
with
of their family. Ugh. I mean, it's possible that like that's like all around us all the time.
And
we don't even know it.
Yes. Okay. You ready for a couple more scary stories?
Sure.
Okay. All right. This happened a few years ago. I was driving through East Pennsylvania, and I'm giving this girl I had just met at a friend's house that night a ride back to her place. Now, getting to her house involves going down one lane road, and I had driven on at least 100 times prior to this. At one section, the road meanders around a ridge by making a big right turn, and then it does a sharp left after a couple hundred yards, and then right again where these two logs laying on the side of the road make a kind of X shape on the ground. Very distinctive landmark, at least for me. This is the way the road has always been. So there we are, trying to find topics to talk about to keep the car ride from becoming awkward since we hardly know each other. I take a right turn round the bend and then a sharp left turn, and then there's a left turn up ahead. Immediately my body goes into flight or flight mode. I remember thinking, this isn't right. I know there's a right turn here. This is not what it's supposed to be. We both felt dead silent and just looked ahead in confusion. The road about 100 yards in front of me had just turned left and disappeared off into the woods. To the right, there was nothing, just the side of a hill and some trees. It looked completely natural, not like a mirage or anything, yet it felt so strange and almost intentionally deceptive. None of this made sense. I know these roads. As we approached the turn, I decided that I'm not going down the road. Something bad was down that road. So I just made the irrational decision to turn right instead and hope for the best. The girl in the car put her hands on the dashboard to brace for impact. My eyes were still fixated down the left-turning road as I started steering to my right. And then as my gaze shifted towards the direction I was now driving in, suddenly I could see the correct road in front of me again. Everything was back to normal. I looked in the rearview mirror, and sure enough, the left-turning road was non-existent. My hands felt icy cold, and I was physically shaking. I pulled over to my right and just sat there in silence. We contemplated going back to investigate, but just looking down the road behind me gave me a sick feeling in my stomach. She felt it too. We decided to get the hell out of there, and that was that. I was very hesitant to go down that road again and avoided it the best I could after that. But a few weeks or months later, I decided to go back in the daytime to check it out. I pulled over at the right turn spot, got out of my car, and walked around the area. This is the part that really freaks me out. I quickly found out that on the left side of the road, obscured by some thick underbrush, was a very steep, rocky cliff that dropped maybe 200 to 250 feet into a ravine. The phantom road would have taken me directly through a clearing in between two trees that led me straight over that cliff. If I had chosen not to follow my gut and drove down that road, there's a very, very good chance that we would be seriously injured or killed. Apparently, several people I've crashed in that area by driving down into the ravine. Must be just a coincidence, but who knows? I don't know what to make of this event. If we were alone, I'd be more willing to write this off as a hallucination or trick of the eye, but I wasn't alone. She saw the same thing I did. I wasn't intoxicated, although my passenger was a bit buzzed, if I remembered correctly. I've also never experienced anything out of the ordinary in my entire life other than this. What do you make of that?
Scary.
That reminds me of my story from West Virginia, where my mom and I stopped at a gas station that didn't exist.
That is so creepy that you, it's pretty
creepy. Do you know what's creepy about it? And I know I've shared this before, is it wasn't creepy at the time. And years later, so it makes you think, how many experiences have we had that were potentially dangerous, potentially life-threatening, creepy, whatever, that we don't even fully process. I believe that we walk through our lives only half awake.
Modern lives?
Modern lives.
Yeah, probably. We I guess you could walk say through... cavemen are more, or would have been potentially more awake because they're more vulnerable.
Yes.
Like, they have to be, you know,
on guard all the time.
Yeah.
And even if we are, we ignore it. We brush it off. Did I ever tell you about the elevator at college?
The elevator at college?
Yeah.
No.
Okay, so, it's not, but this is a really good example of this.
Elevator at college?
Elevator at college. So, when I was in college, I went to West Virginia University.
You told people.
I lived across from the Mountain Lair, which is this common giant restaurants and whatever.
Pizza and all that.
Part of my job I got paid was I would tutor some of the football players to get them whatever. And so they had long practices, right?
Sure.
And my boyfriend was a football player. So they would have long practices and then they'd work out. So we'd meet late.
Yeah, right? Like 8, 9 o'clock.
Right.
Whatever.
And there was different like nooks and crannies and study halls and things like that in the Mountain Lair. And we get some food and whatever. Neat. And I met the most lovely people, by the way, doing this. So they were all wonderful to me. But we were working really late one evening. Can't even remember what football player it was. And man, I'll think about it. I think his name is Corey. Anyway.
Corey Ivey?
Yeah.
He played in the NFL for a while.
Okay, well, he's a very nice boy. Anyway.
I mean, now he's grown.
Well, he's a nice man.
He's an adult.
He's a nice man, but at the time, we were children. Yeah, like, understand. You know, whatever. So, and we were wrapping up and everything else, because I believe he said to me, do you want me to walk you back to your dorm? And I was like, no, I got this. I'm young, whatever. So, we were down in the lowest level. And there was like a freight elevator or something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we parted ways and it's late. I don't even know what time. And I'm going back and I'm going to go upstairs or whatever. And I get in this freight elevator, right? And at the very last minute, this man, at the time I registered him as not a student, but a man, gets in the elevator with me and it closes. Okay.
Okay.
We ride the elevator up.
Probably a rapist.
Don't even say anything. As we get off, I walk out. I will tell you, I was very uneasy. He turns around to me and he goes, never, ever, ever get in a steel box with a man you don't know, and walked away.
That's what he said to you?
Never, ever, ever get in a steel box with a man you don't know, and he walked away.
So do you think he was a real person? That's really odd.
At the time, I did. But here's one of these situations. I don't have permission to do that. Don't do that. But
okay. God bless him. There he is.
I'll reach out and see if he remembers me.
Corey Addy is a...
I'll see if he remembers me. It's a study hall. So, anyway, I think... At the time, it was a perfectly innocuous... whatever.
Innocuous.
Whatever. Yeah. I think years later... I said to him, gosh, that was such a gift because I'll never forget those words.
That's really strange.
I've made decisions based on that before. Then I read a book. Mm-hmm. I read a book when I was in my early 20s, when I was out of college, called The Gift of Fear. And it's written by an FBI agent who writes about safety. Mm-hmm. And he said in one of those one of those things, something similar, like women do this all the time, where you feel something and you don't speak out or you don't move and you don't follow your gut and you get hurt. He said there was one time where this woman was walking home with a bag of groceries and this man followed her into her apartment complex, like it had stairs, like a double door.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She held the door and said, I will help you with your packages up to your apartment. And she said, no, I got it. And he said, I'll follow you. I'll help you with it. No. Let me help
it's
you with
like
your
Wild
packages.
Bill from Silence of the Lambs.
Up into the apartment. And she said, no. She said, no, twice. And he said, no, I'm going to follow you up to your apartment. He did. He busted in the door and he raped her. And the takeaway from that.
Did she die?
No. She just was raped badly.
Okay.
But the takeaway from that is when a woman says no and a man keeps going, they're taking away your power. And that you need to recognize this as a woman that. If you say no and they don't respect that and they go, no, but, because a man tells another man no, it's the end of a conversation. When a woman tells a man no, it's the beginning of a negotiation. And I will never forget those words, but he mentioned something in that book similar to.
So who the hell was this? Was that a real human being?
I think maybe it wasn't.
To be there?
I think maybe it wasn't.
And he's like, hey.
So do you remember how I always tell you that I think I have a spirit guide that's male?
Yes.
And he's annoyed by me?
Yeah, yeah, you said that.
So this man that told me in the elevator, he has no face to me. I don't remember a face.
Like seeing features.
Right. I think that was my spirit guy that was like, wake up. You are walking around campus at night, in the middle of the night, completely unprepared for something that could happen to you.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, that's, I mean, that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. I got a couple more.
Yeah, let's do it.
Everybody feels completely uneasy at
home. No, this is really like...
It's heavy.
It's just, it's very uneasy, yeah.
Don't be uneasy. All right. Okay, here we go.
I'm ready.
You're walking on a trail in the woods near your home. You know these woods well and have often spent time photographing nature here. You aren't just familiar with the territory either. You're a fairly talented woodsman who has walked major trails throughout this area and spent weeks camping. Heck, you're an Eagle Scout. But suddenly, something doesn't feel right. You can't help but start to feel unsettled, like someone is watching you. You keep watching, feeling like the sensation is all in your head. The feeling starts to get more intense, and with every step you take, giving you a vibe that you are about to be hunted by something huge. No, this isn't normal for you. You start to feel seriously uneasy, as if the next step will be your last one. You feel hunted, and whatever is hunting you is really, truly scary. You then notice the entire forest is quiet. You start to run, and you run until you feel okay once more. Congratulations, you've just experienced what is known as panic in the woods.
I experienced that when we were in West Virginia.
Panic in the woods? Time.
Yeah, I'll explain to you what happened.
Please.
So I would leave to go running. We were there in, November?
Mm-hmm.
It was fairly cold. I was running out in the running on a trail that was right off the road. There was a fishing place about 5 miles away. It's mm-hmm. It was down this back lane.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been running for, I don't know, 4 miles or so. And all of a sudden, I just realized that I was out, by myself, just totally vulnerable. In the middle of the woods, and
right.
It scared me for no reason in particular. But all of a sudden, I hadn't felt scared, and then all of a sudden, I felt I didn't even know why.
Yeah.
But I just felt a sense of fear and dread, and I just turned around and just ran back to the main road as fast as I could go.
Wow.
Because I just felt like something is watching me.
Yeah.
Whether that was real or not.
Yeah.
That's how it felt.
Right.
And, it was highly uncomfortable.
Wow. Well, they say those who experience panic in the woods, it's the most primal fear imaginable. It's imagining being as close to death as you'll ever come. The feeling doesn't subside until you start to run or continue to run for a serious distance.
Yeah. Okay? No, I ran probably for a mile to get back to the road.
Wow. Well, this phenomenon has a particularly strong tie to Western Europe, and that's actually hinted at by its name. The name is an allusion to the god Pan.
Yeah.
Okay. Who was a forest trickster known to startle people who wandered into his domain.
It's like the fairies.
Mm-hmm. Scary tends to be the easiest way to describe it, but it's really, really more involved than a typical spooky feeling. It's a sense of foreboding, anxiety, and uneasiness that permeates your entire body seemingly out of nowhere. Most people who are unlucky enough to experience claim that they have an overwhelming fear of being unwelcome where they are, and it only seems to subside when they leave.
Yeah.
Some people just don't feel a sense of urgency. They feel it too. They feel panic. It says to cause maybe a buzzing in your ears or a sense of vertigo.
No, I didn't feel that. I just felt scared. Out of the blue, all of a sudden, I'm like, man, I'm out here by myself and there could be bears or something.
Well, the entire wooded area seems to be affected by panic, with birds and animals growing increasingly quiet as the lifeless vibe seems to settle in. When someone experienced panic while walking their dog, the phenomenon onset also seems to place dogs on edge. It's not unusual to hear hikers that have dogs dragging them away from areas where the panic starts to set in. Some also report the dogs letting out a low growl or staying mm-hmm. perfectly still as if hiding from something.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Mm-hmm. I always felt when I was out, walking the dog with Scout.
Yeah.
I always felt more calm.
Because
she's there. She can hear
right.
better than me. She can see better than me. She has all those sensory abilities that I don't have.
Though the sense of foreboding and danger is the most commonly brought up theme of panic, there's also another one that's equally alarming. It's almost deafening, sudden silence that people notice during its onset. When at a moment panic sets in, people start to realize they're no longer hearing birds or insects chirping. The only sound they can hear are the sounds of leaves crunching under their feet. The silence has a very paranormal feeling to it, even going so far to affect aspects that shouldn't possibly be capable of being silenced. For example, hikers who were near busy roads that experienced panic noted that they could no longer hear the rushing of cars on the street despite knowing the road would be busy at that time.
But then again, like, I mean, since we're kind of going over this, perhaps it's not that there's a person watching you.
Right.
Perhaps it's just that that we as human beings are so used to being in civilization.
That we're out of touch with nature.
Yes. And that alone gives us fear.
Correct. Well, one could argue that panic in the woods is a natural instinct humans have when they are being stalked by big prey. That wouldn't be too off in some cases. Some people have reported similar experience when stalked by large predators like bears and cougars. However, there's a very striking phenomenon element to panic. In a typical hunter-prey situation, you can see what's stalking you eventually. With panic, the predator is always unseen, or at times, a paranormal creature like Bigfoot is seen.
Oh, God.
What's interesting about panic in the woods is that it doesn't just affect a single person. It can affect groups, too. People who have experienced it in a group explain that everyone felt the exact same thing, even when the fear wasn't openly communicated. For the most part, panic seems to be more about silence and dread than anything else. For a select few, the phenomenon is also paired with telepathic messages. A small percentage of hikers who experience panic claim to get messages from unknown sources in their minds warning them not to come back. Some also get mental images of a wild animal or a terrifying creature chasing them out of the woods.
Really?
Yeah. Though many people never see what sparks the panic onset, some do gleam a little insight into what may be out there. Sometimes people are able to see a shadow or a very tall person peek out from the trees.
Oh, my God.
Other times, it appears to be far more worrisome experience that makes them doubt their reality. This is particularly true with a story discovered on Reddit.
How are we
written by a woman?
How are we going to be able to go back in the woods and go camping now?
I don't know. Who experienced it with her husband? The couple noticed that their cat ran into the woods one day. They pursued the cat, calling out to it. The cat kept meowing, urging the two to go further into the forest. Eventually, they started questioning how their cat could run miles into the forest in such a short time. The cat's meow suddenly stopped, and the panic set in. They decided to turn around and run back home. The very cat that they were chasing was waiting for them by their backyard door, which suggests that something was mimicking its voice in order to hunt them down in those woods. So what causes this? Truly no one knows. Perhaps in some cases there are actually predators that are stalking people in the woods. It's very likely to be a cause at least once in a while.
Yeah,
however, that doesn't explain all the cases, especially when it comes to moments where it's abundantly clear that there was no potential predators nearby. Psychologically speaking, it could be that panic has a legitimate cause. It could just be an effect of psyching oneself out, similar to the way people feel out when they're creeped out in a place that's been reportedly haunted. It's fine. Even when it's not. All right. That being said, silence alone can't really explain all the sensations that people felt during panic. It also doesn't fully make sense when you consider how many mentally stable veteran woodsmen have felt it.
Yeah.
It's very likely that a paranormal element is at play. According to ancient European folklore, panic in the woods is caused when the forest decides to fight back.
I mean, that's legit because think of a guy like...
Les Stroud.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Like, this guy spends hours and hours and hours and hours in the woods.
Yes.
And he's creeped out about...
He was creeped out.
Bigfoot.
Yep, and he had rocks thrown at him.
Yeah.
Yep.
And this dude, whether you believe him or not...
Whether you believe it was Bigfoot or not...
Yeah.
He was freaked.
But here's a guy who has spent, like I said, a lot of time in the woods and, like, you know, wouldn't... You just don't look at him and think, hey, you know, he's going to be scared.
I know. So maybe it's the woods fighting back. Could it be the forest spirits feel like we're encroaching onto them because we're urbanizing? Who knows? Who knows? In recent years, people have started to become aware of strange disappearances in national parks and other similarly wild areas. The disappearance were highlighted in Dave Politis' book, Missing 411.
Dave, what's up, man? Hope you're listening.
Please, I want to interview you. The cases highlighted in the book are extremely strange and happen to people of all ages and backgrounds, even though he does profile.
Did he say extremely strange? They're creepy. They're scary as shit.
Scary as shit.
Yeah, no, many of the people strange.
Who vanish do so within feet of each other without a noise.
Exactly.
When the like, victims of
as
the
dis- if poof, they poof, just disappear.
Poof. When the victims of the disappearances are found, they're usually found miles away in areas that are nearly impossible to travel. considering how bizarre the cases are in Missing 411, it's not surprising that there's an ongoing theory that panic in the woods may have something to do with it. Some suggest that panic is a way that the human body protects itself from whatever is causing those disappearances, since it seems to be an unknown force that takes people away. Some people who have had close brushes with missing 411 cases do sometimes mention a pervasive sense of being watched. However, most people who are very close to the vanishing party do not recall anything particularly unusual in the moments leading up to the disappearance. Vertigo and buzzing aspects of panic should be worrisome and might be to blame for some of the disappearances. Maybe they're confused. People who have had experienced disorientation of this phenomenon often get lost for hours into places they shouldn't. And just as quickly as it settles in, it's suddenly gone. And
so it's like the buzzing in the ears. Like
it can be, and vertigo. The only way to make panic end is to run away from the area.
That's what I did.
Once people flee vacation to a certain distance, the panic subsides.
Now, as soon, and not to compare, but as soon as I got near the road,
yeah,
then like it immediately stopped and abated, and I felt like, you know, everything's okay.
Yes, it says, what's strange is that people describe the fear subsiding almost like crossing a threshold. One minute, the entire area feels terrifying and foreboding. The next, as if nothing happened and the woods go back to being as welcoming as possible.
I mean, I would agree. That's how I felt as soon as I was by the road.
How would you like to know that you were almost a missing 411 case?
Oh, God. I mean, that would, like, at least you'd watch me on TV, I guess, if that was the case.
Oh, my God.
Watch my story with... Politis, like,
are you okay?
No, it was. I mean, it was.
It's terrifying.
Stories to be extremely terrifying. I know. And we go in the woods a lot,
and we do
go hiking and stuff.
We do,
and I think about that shit.
And we circle this topic almost every week. Like when I was writing this, this just evolved. You can tell because it's sort of sporadic and evolves. Yeah. But one thing led to me into another, and I'll be damned if I didn't land on
Missing 411. It's inevitable that we at some point will
cover this.
Talk to that guy.
Specifically, yes.
I want to speak to him.
That's it for my terrifying woods experience about being watched.
That's crazy.
And I don't even know what we're going to call this episode. Tyrant. Like, we're off on...
The Scary Woods.
The Scary Woods. Being watched in the woods.
Right.
Yeah. So if you've had your own experience in the woods, maybe like Jason, you've nearly escaped panic.
It sounds stupid
bring it's
that
not.
Up, but that's how I felt.
Like, when you experience something like that, it's very real.
I can't even explain it because chances are there was no one in the woods.
No. But
I felt afraid.
Correct.
For no reason.
Okay.
As far as I could tell.
All right, Jay, what do you got for our scary side stories?
Scary sidebar number
scary
one.
Scary sidebars.
Number one.
All right.
In Yellowstone National Park, They caught on a trail cam something that is very unusual. It says that the rarest animal inhabiting Yellowstone National Park was captured for the first time in trail camera footage from that iconic park. And you're going to ask, hey, well, what'd they see?
Yeah.
They saw, get this, a wolverine near Mammoth Hot Springs area of the park.
Oh.
So, wolverine caught on...
Do they look terrifying?
Yeah, they're terrifying. Well, I mean, they're...
Ferocious.
Wolverines are mid-sized carnivores in the weasel family that typically occupy high-elevation alpine and forest habitats, exist in low densities in the park, and are... really detected. And
they're elusive.
They have teeth, they have claws, they are ferocious.
Okay. All right.
Okay, so that is story one.
Okay.
Story two, if you just want to give me a moment here, I'll cue it up. This story is crazy, man. Have you ever heard of Pablo Escobar?
Yes.
Okay. Pablo Escobar was a humongous successful drug runner from Colombia.
Okay? Yes.
Like he made a fortune.
Right.
Running cocaine and who knows what else.
Had amazing fashion sense.
He did. He died in a pair of shorts and like a t-shirt. He looked portly. This guy was worth like a colossal fortune.
Yes.
Really, it was, I mean,
a real incredible. Sexy character.
All right, so anyway, Pablo Escobar, like myself.
Yes.
Like myself, he loved animals.
Okay. Okay,
so Pablo, because he could afford it.
Yes.
Brought in, you know, to Medellin, where he lived, where he had his compound, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
He had, you know, like, just a bunch of just different, you know, different animals, what you might call a...
exotic?
Yeah, like, say, okay. You know, like a zoo,
oh, God. So to speak. Okay.
So anyway, Pablo Escobar loved hippopotamuses.
Rip.
Yeah, he loved hippopotamuses.
We use so hippo. He
brought his own hippos to his private zoo at his ranch.
Oh, God.
Says here that... So, you know, let's know.
Do you need a permit for that? Fast
forward to today. Okay. He didn't get a permit. Pablo Escobar?
I'm just saying. Don't look at the cocaine. So look at the hippos.
Pablo started to breed these hippos, right?
Right, as one does.
And the hippos population now, you know, down in Colombia has spread out of control.
Stop it.
And they are now seen some 100 miles east of Medellin.
Stop it.
Yeah, this population.
Right.
So, you know, they actually, Colombia started to study these hippos because right? They're like, hey, this is a problem.
Right.
Well, so it turns fucking out that the study recommends that the hippos have to be culled to prevent long-term negative effects both okay. to the animals.
And to the environment.
Not the environment, but like, yes, the environment, but people.
What are they eating? Because they're
dangerous. So the issues are concerns over the welfare of those animals and the attachment of some locals to their new neighborhoods. So you've got like these hippos that were bred and are now like coming into
right.
neighborhoods.
Wow.
It says, and last thing here, but back in the 80s, Pablo, God rest his soul, he imported one male and three female hippos to join his zoo.
Right.
And so
once
he was killed, they were able to relocate lots of other wild species, but they did not.
But they didn't figure so the hippo the was like him all that important.
No, they left the hippo.
Jesus God.
So hey, Pablo, you just made our podcast, man. Congratulations.
Yeah. It's interesting.
It is interesting. One more I've got here.
Okay.
Give me a second. I'll cue this next one up. Actually, two more stories, okay. But these aren't as long.
All right.
So, going down to South America here, we're going to Argentina. And in Argentina, paleontologists have uncovered the remains of a gigantic dinosaur, and they think it's one of the largest creatures to have ever walked the earth. However, I would say, I mean, isn't it kind of, you know, widely known that dinosaurs were big, you know?
I thought so.
For the most part.
Yeah, and I feel like Jurassic Park has ruined it for us, because you have to give me something like a...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, all right.
I don't know.
Is this. So the Indominus Rex. This is like a really big... Yeah, it's just a really big dinosaur species that they found.
Do you know there's a lot of people that don't think dinosaurs ever existed?
Who knows?
I don't know.
So they found the... fossilized remains of a 98-million-year-old titanosaur in Neuquén province in Argentina's northwest Patagonia in thick sedimentary deposits known as the
I don't think anybody cares.
Candeleros Formation. Okay. So just a big dinosaur.
All right.
No
Nephilim.
No
Nephilim skull.
No giants in this one. Just a gigantic dinosaur.
Okay.
Last story, and right. This one actually relates quite a bit to what we just spoke about, which I think is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
This I found on Facebook. So here we go. The headline reads: missing toddler.
Found after three
days. Said he was with a bear.
Yeah, I've heard that story.
So this little kid, you know, like we've been talking about, He's gone for 3 days.
There's no way he could. Well, there's no way he could have survived.
Look at his picture.
I know.
If you can see it,
looks like Bo.
Looks like a little dude.
Yeah.
Like wearing just like a little t-shirt.
Well, I remember they interviewed like conservationists and beer experts and bears. They were like that. They said, "Yeah, that doesn't happen." Like they were like, "Is it possible that a bear would be maternal and maybe take?" And they're like, "No."
No, they would eat him.
No, or ignore him. Maybe
found after 3 days. Said he was with a bear.
Jesus.
I don't think it's Yogi.
I don't, oh, God. I don't know.
Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
That's the kind of shit that I see and like, and it just freaks me out.
Well, you know what? Maybe his spirit animal is a bear.
Maybe
his guardian angel came as a bear because that's comforting and warm.
I guess.
I don't know. I want to believe that. I don't want to believe it's some weirdo homeless man that's all hairy.
Oh, Lord. So then...
Or Bigfoot.
One of the comments here says... That it's possible to have been a Squatch, which I love when people just say Squatch.
I know.
Instead of like Sasquatch.
I know.
Squatch.
By the way, there's some turmoil going on in my group.
Is
I should
there?
Probably do a shout out.
There's infighting?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of this. So here's
your group right now.
Okay, In Search of Bigfoot, and I'm a moderator, and people drive me nuts. So
wait, what's happening?
Okay, so here's
the
thing.
Tell us more, please.
And this is always going to be how it is. There are a section of people that want to have a little fun.
It's like Days of Our Lives.
It's really. Then when I have a little fun, it's like, hey, let's post this. It's funny. Whatever. And then another group will be like, that's not serious scientific evidence. That's irresponsible. Don't post that. I'm like, okay, fine. So some of that's just funny. It starts out that way. But then it devolves into name calling and insults.
Imagine.
And then I will get a request to block somebody or remove something. And I get like, this person reported content. Let me tell you, from this administrator.
So what do you do then?
If it's abusive, I will delete the comment. I typically never block somebody unless it was a really harassing situation. On one post, there is a woman researcher that is researching Bigfoot or researching whatever. And the guys had a row at her saying she was ugly. And the
guys had a what?
Like they were giving her, ripping up on her.
Okay.
And women were like, are you kidding? She's a scientist. But they were like, look at that mouth. I bet she has horse teeth. I mean, it was just... And so I was Jesus Christ. Yeah, it was like middle school. And I'm a referee. So I just turned off the comments. I'm like, that's it, boys.
Funny.
We're done. And other people want to be like, I think you should block all of them.
It's no. What do you expect?
I will
it's
block face, you.
But it's Facebook.
Right. I will block you and delete you if you post advertisement. If you are advertising iPhones, you're out of here. But if you go at somebody in a sort of way, unless you really are harassing or you say something that is not funny and mean, if it's funny but it's mean, I might like keep it. But if it's not funny and it's not nice, then I probably will delete it. But it's awful. They just fight all the time.
It's Facebook.
I know.
Like, you gotta just say
and
that
I am just like,
salt,
I am not the world's referee. I'm approving people's requests to be part of the group. I feel like that's my only job.
It's not as if it's like a, you know, university environment.
No.
Like a university
right.
research
and sometimes
setting,
I think about it and I say,
Facebook.
Yeah, that's not a nice thing to say, but you're a grown person. Keep scrolling.
Just shake it
Stop.
Off.
Stop. But so anyway, but I will block people if they're like openly terrible.
I mean, I've had, you know, people like yell at us through, you know, just
one time.
Just on the con. Well, listen, that person.
But it scarred you for
yeah,
life.
Yeah, listen, I know you're out there.
So, well, listen, are we going to come back next week?
Yes.
I guess so. I don't know. Probably. I'll probably have more to say about something.
We're going to be back next week, Countdown.
We're back on track. We're back on doing this. Yeah, we haven't talked about what happens if we're not the couple that scares together. Just like one person that's scared. Somebody who scares by themselves.
Oh, so you just waited until the very end to drop that.
No, I'm just saying. We got to get back on track, I guess. We haven't figured out who has rights to this podcast.
I don't... Whatever.
It's mine? I can have it?
I mean, listen, I'm not...
Well, you know what? We'll phone a friend and ask for some advice.
Phone a friend.
That's for some advice.
There's a whole backstory
which we will not get into.
A lot of like, you know, marital conflict has been going on also during that time. No, there has been.
Oh,
if we're being
in
real.
A typical
no,
marriage.
No, listen, we haven't been exactly getting along very well during
that's because
this,
somebody
this
doesn't
last
sleep.
Quarantine period. I love how all this is fun. Just it's so whatever.
Somebody
whatever.
Write in to tell Jason that if you have a happy wife. You have a happy life, and your life would be so much happier if you just believe that to your core.
Sure.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Anyway, we'll be back with a great new episode next week, and have a great week, guys.
Talk about just like waiting to
wait to the
drop
end.
A bomb. Thanks right for at listening. The end of the show.
Bye.
See you.